Welcome. You're tuned in to The Rest of the Sermon, a podcast where we dive deeper into content, conversation, and application of Sunday's sermon at Westside Church in Poplar Bluff.
If you want more information, you can visit our website at westsidepb.org. If you have any questions you'd like answered on this podcast, you can email them to info@westsidepb.
Most importantly, it's all about Jesus.
And we're back with the rest of the sermon. Thank you for tuning in to KWOC.
Poplar Bluff?
I would love, I mean, I could do it. So a local radio guy just retired out. Shout out to Galen and morning trivia and all that stuff. It's the trivia when I'm taking the kids to school in the morning, 94.5. It's great and we call in and stuff. But he just retired, went on to a career, and I had like three people text me like, are you going to put in for Galen's? Or it would be early morning.
That's some encouragement.
Being an early, I guess. It would be fun, but radio? Radio is still really big in our area.
Oh, for sure.
For sure.
I mean, podcasts. I mean, that's...
Everybody always said, like, you know, TV is going to kill radio. That didn't happen.
No.
It's still around.
Yeah, if anything's killing TV, it's YouTube and TikTok. I mean...
Right.
I'd be curious to see how that works from an algorithm standpoint of watching something on YouTube. You know, we watch some creators that get 4 to 5 million views in a day or two.
I can answer that.
And it's like,
this is what's so crazy. So the GOP debates just happened, right, for the Republican primaries. And it was expected to be heavily watched and televised. It was.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Very, very intentional. Tucker Carlson long form interviewed Donald Trump. Well, Tucker Carlson has moved his show strictly to Twitter or X, formerly known as Twitter, right? And they scheduled it to go live. It was pre-recorded, but it went live on Twitter exactly when the GOP thing went live.
Got it.
So here are the analytics. 10 minutes into the GOP debates, they were into the hundreds of thousands that were viewing, okay? I'm going to say like 200 to 400,000 people were watching. They later cracked a million as it went on, but this is 10 minutes in. 10 minutes into Tucker Carlson's interview with Trump, they were approaching 2 million impressions on the video.
That's just wild.
I mean, that's...
And you consider the audience, too.
It's unbelievable.
Like, cable television
the
is...
The only way to watch... I mean, you could watch it, I guess, on your computer. I don't know who logs in to Twitter on their computer. Like, that's on your phone.
Yeah.
You know, that's just wild.
I just think that's an interesting comparison. It's nuts. You know, if you want to get a message out, what's the fastest way to do it?
Well,
you know?
So the history goes, there were multiple presidents that utilized technology that changed their presidency. Number one, Abraham Lincoln in the newspaper. The Gettysburg Address is like, I think, 170 words. Hmm. It's very short because he knew that in order to make an impact, it needed to be printed in the paper to circulate.
Makes sense.
Okay. So that was huge because the commoner, the plowman in Alabama, read the Gettysburg Address. So that's a big deal.
Sure.
The second one was John F. Kennedy and TV. Hmm. So when he debated Richard Nixon, John Kennedy had just gotten back from holiday in Maine. He was tan. He looked great. Richard Nixon was like up all night and flew in that morning. He had a 5 o'clock shadow. He wasn't feeling well. He looked a little bit pale. Everyone says that debate won John Kennedy the presidency because of what he looked like on TV. No president ever utilized television.
Interesting.
And up until that point, like John Kennedy. They say that Ronald Reagan did that a lot too because he was an actor and so he knew how to do that. But the next one was Barack Obama. No presidential candidate, I think this is correct, no presidential candidate, they're not president yet, okay, had appeared on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine until Barack Obama. So he utilized that.
So the first president.
That ever. Millennial generation okay. to do that. But all of that pales in comparison because not a single president since Donald J. Trump has had the access to bypass media and speak directly to the American people through Twitter like Donald Trump did.
Yeah.
It's crazy, dude, to think about how that yeah. technology affects stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah, it's I would say, yeah, I mean, that's just you talk about Obama to Trump. I mean, that's a short.
It's nuts.
It's not that even that long of time.
It's the next president. You know, speaking of algorithms, here's a would you rather question. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
It's really good.
I'm buckled up.
Would you rather, and it deals with movies, so you're going to love this.
All right, yeah.
Would you rather be trapped in the Matrix or, I mean, technically we could be in the Matrix. We just don't know it yet. Would you rather be trapped in the Matrix universe or the Lord of the Rings universe? Which saga in universe would you rather be in?
I'd say Matrix, right?
The Matrix?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, give me your reasoning.
I just, I feel like there's just the unknown problem. I don't know. That's a good one.
It's a good one.
That's a really good one. Because I'm curious to hear what listeners say on that one.
So the Matrix is technology, is all of that. And then the Lord of the Rings is opposite, but it's mythical. So you've got dragons and ogres. Yeah. I would do Lord of the Rings solely because of Gandalf.
Okay.
I mean, I would just want to be in the presence of Gandalf. And the Shire, the way that Tolkien describes the Shire is incredible, man.
Man, this is a real... So you talk about, Alex, you should be excited. This is movies. Here we go. This is a confession. Here we go. The world, I am now confessing my sins to the world.
Whoa.
Get ready. The last summer, Megan and I, for the first time... That's right. Like we gave it a try and first time ever we tried, we watched the extended versions of all of the Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
For the first time.
But you have.
I have.
Okay, good.
One time through.
That's okay.
That's like what? The extended versions, I mean, that's almost 10 hours of...
Oh, each one would be close.
It was like three and a half.
3-4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So we watched it. It was great.
Yeah.
But man, that was... I don't know why it took me so long to see it too. Like the whole thing.
You know they filmed it back to back. It was 7 years of those actors' lives.
Isn't that something to do with the characters to like be able to portray them as they grew older?
And so they were over in like the Greenland, Ireland area. I think I'm saying that correctly. But all of the actors got matching tattoos because, I mean, dude, that's 7 years of your life doing one project back to back.
Yeah.
Like continuously filming. That's unbelievable, right?
I instantly think of Harry Potter.
Yeah, right? I would go with Lord of the Rings, I think, just for Gandalf. So that's good. Okay, here's the second one that I thought was really good. Would you rather live in a country... with an extremely low cost of living? I mean, you're balling, man. Let's say 20 grand and you're just balling out of control. Okay. But extremely horrible weather. So it's rainy, it's cold, it's just all the above. Low income, you can live well for little, horrible weather. Or would you live in a country with a high cost of living, but beautiful weather?
You just described everyone in California for that second.
Right, or Hawaii, you know?
But yeah.
Low cost of living, so you're able to budget and
I think
ball.
Of the social implications to that question for some reason. Of like, regardless of environment, you now have, you are resourced to the area in which you're planted.
Sure.
So for that person that has a lot of funds, their impact is greater than the other person. Like maybe it's more of a humanitarian look at it.
See, I was thinking it real practical that if it's a high cost of living, I'm working all the time. So would I even enjoy the nice weather?
Sure.
You understand what I'm saying? So like I mean, I'm grinding it out. So how am I, is that walking to my car at work? You know, I'm pulling 12-hour days. I think that's a good one for the listeners. I would really like to hear personalities
yeah.
there.
Yeah, because there's multiple ways you could go with that one.
100%.
What do you, I mean, is it just to be in a nice area? Because that's some people's
sure.
value of success is just like, well, I get to walk outside my patio.
Sure.
And it's, you know, I get to sure. look at the beach. And
it's or like, if you're,
it's $9,000 a month
or if, a closet. If you're like me, I mean, the weather greatly affects my energy, my mood. So if it's sure. doom and gloom, dude, my mental health would be, that would yeah, be rough, true. Man. You know?
Yeah.
So, but your mental health could also be stress from working all the time, but you're in this nice location. So we want to hear from you guys.
Yep.
Would you rather live somewhere with low cost of living? I mean, you can have the tiny home and the mansion and all the above, horrible weather, or would you love to live somewhere pristine weather, but high cost of living? Let me follow it up with this. Where is your most favorite place you've ever been?
Been.
Oh, not, yes. No, not no, no. Ever. Not dreaming.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've been here and you're like, babe, we got to go back.
So it dawned on me. So I'll tell you the location before I give you my pastor spiel.
Okay.
Costa Rica.
Come on. Now, that's not Costa Rica, but anyway.
You just offended sorry. Everybody. Yeah,
that was racist, probably is what it was.
But when we were coming back from Costa Rica, so there's two different, when you're going through customs, obviously this is international. So you're going through customs and obviously it's so funny. If you've never been through customs immigration checkpoint.
Never. I've never been. I've only been to Canada.
They still ask you what they ask you in the movie. Like, are you here for business or pleasure? That's still a question.
And do you answer like James Bond? Both.
Dude, I was like, pastor, is this a spiritual warfare? Am I here on business?
You know? What about Costa Rica yeah. for you was like, we got to go back.
So yeah, yeah. So we were in the customs immigration line and there's two lines. There's one for obviously immigrants and there's two or people that are visiting. And
yeah.
There's also another line for residents.
Okay.
And I noticed a lot of people walking into Costa Rica, returning to Costa Rica with animals that were Americans. And so Americans, believe it or not, they will live in Costa Rica. Like wow. they'll go and visit
yeah.
and they will live there. But the cost of live, like there are U.S. currency is prime. There.
Absolutely.
I remember when I went to the ATM.
So the exchange rate is plus. So yeah, not leaving though.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, no, when you got your exchange, it was so funny how many fees I got attacked on the ATM. Because we use the ATM on the site there.
Yeah.
Because like you can't get on the internet. There's no 5G in Costa Rica.
And you're also
Rica.
Not getting on the plane strapped with cash.
No.
You know, that's
so yeah.
not
so,
good.
When I saw those people coming back, I mean, they were super tan. And it yep. was in November.
Amen.
And I was like, all right, so they're super tan.
Amen.
But just they were able to walk through customs. It was just one of those experiences. I was like, those are Americans. They're bringing wow. their dogs back home because they visit family in
yeah.
the States and they'll come back and live in Costa Rica year round. And
wow.
what we learned about Costa Rica was just like they love Americans, one, because of generosity.
Sure.
Generosity is something that honestly is a very Western idea of like how generous we are, like even tipping. Like
great.
That's offensive in countries like
China. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I could see that.
So it just, but anyway, all that to go back to say, Costa Rica, no doubt. The,
wow.
the weather, the people, the culture, Pura Vida. I mean, it's just
Let's
all of
go,
it.
Baby.
It's just all of it.
That's so awesome. So I've only been to Canada. So I don't even consider that.
Hey.
Yeah. And it was okay. not, it was during the winter and it was daylight for about 18 hours. It was weird. And
sure.
their milk comes in bags.
I've heard of this.
Yeah. And you cut the corner. Yeah. You cut the corner and put it in. Yeah. But my dad was speaking at a conference in San Diego, California. And so we flew in and you fly in really close to the naval base, which is cool. So we flew in and it's beach.
Okay.
I mean, just sand and beach. And we hung out for about 3 to 4 hours. I vividly remember getting sunburned on my face. Okay. So this is important to know.
Sure.
Because we were hanging out, just chilling, waiting because we were going to have to drive 4 to 5 hours to where the conference location was. Well, unbeknownst to me, the conference location was in the mountains. So now get this. We flew in. I had just been on the beach, got sunburned on my face. We drove up the mountains and they were snow-capped. And that night, I was in a jacuzzi and there was snow on the ground.
And your face was beet red.
And my face was sunburned because I was at the beach that morning. And so I just vividly remember being like, this is insane.
So you're going to Canada.
I mean, I was, well, San Diego's not in Canada.
Oh, my bad.
It's California. But it was like, it was unreal, man, to think I could have surfed and snowboarded in the same day. It was unreal to me.
Yeah.
So San Diego is my
I feel like everyone's going with me on this one. Costa Rica.
Oh,
I
mean, I'm sure. A tropical place. I want to go.
I want to go. Sand beaches. And
I definitely want to go out of the country. Courtney wants to do like Italy,
yeah.
You know, and all that stuff because the food is extremely healthy.
Yeah. Fun fact, they don't eat a lot. Like, what? Who was I watching one time? And they said something about like, yeah, people think they eat pizza all the time in Italy. It's like,
right.
No, it's not.
No, how it works. No. Right. Italy is also, what were you saying before the podcast? Italy is considered a what zone?
Not Italy.
What
you
is
were
it?
Saying is you were saying is Italy.
I was saying I'm
Okinawa,
sorry.
Okinawa, Japan.
Okinawa.
I think it's
yes.
Japan. Japan or China.
Yeah.
Please forgive me if I messed that up. Okinawa.
And it's considered a what?
It's called a blue zone. So
what's a blue zone?
So yeah. So let's talk about this for a little bit because when I was watching this, so first off, it's on Netflix. So
okay.
On Netflix, there's a series called The Untold Story or something like that.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah.
They're standoffs. Each yes. one's a standalone.
And so this specific one was called the Blue Zone.
Okay.
And so this guy, he's. First off, it's really cool. The guy that does the story is like, he's a worldwide like expeditionist. So like,
okay.
He's like biked across the globe is yeah. what his like gnome to fame is.
Yeah.
And so that being said though, he did this, like he wanted to do this science, call it research, whatever, but he went to the places called blue zones.
Okay.
So what happened was he was looking at a map and what it was it was longevity of life. Where, what areas of the world do people live the longest?
Okay.
Because records say right now, as we speak, you would think with the advancements of technology, the amount of time and effort,
cleanliness,
we're actually, our lifespans are getting shorter.
Yep.
And so the question then is what drives longevity of life? You know, is it just staying away from alcohol and cigarettes?
Wow.
He went further. And what's really cool about this is he looked at a map and there were certain places called blue zones,
yep.
which was primarily, and this, a lot of it started from like COVID death, like it was just kind of one of those things.
Sure.
But blue zones are essentially those people that are able to live plus 80 years old. And then he wanted to say what's in those areas is causing those sorts of... What's the environment? So there was one in Florida, Loma Linda, I think is one of them.
Yeah, I know, right? Where, I mean, I know of that, yeah.
So like, but there's multiple places, but one specifically that he went to was called Okinawa, and it was a bunch of people, and he would interview someone that's in their 85, 95. There was language barriers and stuff,
sure.
But they were able to, like, people, like, they were flexing their muscles to show how strong they were in their 90s, the physical environment. Anyway, it was just really cool to talk about because his researcher's name is Dan Butenin or something like that, but he's a National Geographic longevity researcher.
Such a cool title.
It's really
cool. No way that fits on a business card.
Like, yeah, dude, I want to sit next to him on the plane.
Yes.
So he went and he like visited these people. And so he did research and asked them questions, and there's a wide variety. So in case you're wondering, the gift to long life is not one thing.
Okay.
It's a host of things.
Sure.
But I thought it was fascinating when he talks about obviously diet. Shout out to anyone that eats sweet potatoes, because apparently like sweet red potatoes are like, it's just one of those
really
things
good
that
for you.
This Okinawa town was like, apparently like they had a food shortage one time and they like claim that it like saved their lives
Whoa.
Because they were able to eat as a protein source.
Wow.
Anyway, that whole thing though brought to something interesting is one of the things that led to longevity, which I think ties into Pillars of Truth. We're talking about church life and things like that. It brought up the idea of faith. And one of the many things besides healthy diet, exercise, all those things, the right type of diet, by the way, carbs aren't bad for you.
Sure.
Most of the people that lived older.
Yeah. So the reason why Courtney is fascinated with Italy is their wheat. So the wheat over there is not genetically modified. The soil, because we produce things the fastest and in bulk quantities. So think of the chicken that we're injecting steroids in, and it's a 6-month lifespan when it's supposed to be like 18 months. So one of the reasons why those areas is considered a very healthy area and people live longer is the wheat and stuff
It's just those things you don't normally would hear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Faith.
So one of those was faith. And here's the crazy statistic. Now there's kind of two parts to this. One is obviously the time. And the question is, does going to, you ready for this? This is a hot take for sure.
Okay.
Going physically to a faith-based community once a week, How many years on average do you think they claim that faith plays into longevity of life?
Ooh, this is a great question. So the average age of a male is like 81 or 79 or something in the States.
Yep.
So how many years, like extra years, does
if you were to take faith out of that person's life, would they?
I'm going to say four.
Four?
I'm going to say like four extra years.
So yeah, so they say their research lands them at 7 years.
Wow.
It actually,
which is also the number of completion.
Right, like coincidence. But yeah, 7 years. And when I heard that, it just made, it just was for me a light bulb of
wow.
I mean, just to, and the only kicker to that was it's not Christian faith. It was just faith in general of a belief of whether you're in a ritualistic society, whether you're in a, whatever it is, the fact that you are disciplined in that repetition.
It's good for you.
It's good. It's discipline for you and your brain every week to disengage, you know, and we could even get a little bit more hot take. I shared this at Sabbath Sunday this last time around that Seventh-day Adventist, they are on paper.
Yep.
They're projected to live longer because of the Saturday Sabbath.
The day of rest.
And they actually believe the rest of the body of it's not just taking a day off. Sabbath is way much more than just not thinking about work, but it's actually like rejoicing in your abundance that God's given you. And so anyway, it's just an interesting thing when you look at the longevity of life. Does your life depend on going to church?
Yeah.
Well, here at our podcast, we're telling you research supports
it. Amen. There's two things that are interesting to that to me. Number one is I wonder if there's somewhere in that research about like transcendence. Like it's you're going to worship something bigger than you.
I think so.
And so that transcendent aspect. But number two, this goes directly to a Bible verse, which really segues even into the aspect of honor.
Sure.
So one of God's Ten Commandments is honor your father and your mother, right? Interesting. One of the only Ten Commandments that is quoted and used in the New Testament is in the book of Ephesians by the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 5 when he's talking about the family. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her and all of this. And then going into chapter 6, he talks to children. Hmm. And he says, children, honor your father and mother. And then he says this, because it's the only commandment that comes with a promise. And the promise is, if you honor your father and mother, you will live long in the days of your life.
Yeah.
So honor, in an aspect, is good for you, and it helps you live longer.
I mean, dude, I think this is good news for someone listening.
Because that's crazy, man.
Just because, I mean, how? I mean, yeah, it's and I don't want to always just go back to like this is just how we are nowadays,
right?
But I mean that how much of that is lost, and then in the process of that, you realize, well, what's missing? Then let's go try to fix it. It's like the answer's already out there.
100%.
You know, it's not this new. We got to go find it. We got to go grab it. And yeah, that's where I just, the longevity, does your faith, like, I don't know, just to me, there's so much of it that I guess, especially, I'm 31,
sure.
Right? So, you know, for those of you listening, depending on what age you are, I mean, what, you know, season of life you're in, you start in your 30s, you start asking yourself those questions, like, what's it going to take to live to 60?
I mean, you could say we're approaching a halfway point.
Yeah, and it makes you think of, like, is the way I'm living, dieting, exercise, but yeah, so just, does going to church save your life?
Yeah, wow, that's cool. Yes, in a number of ways.
Like, wow.
Yeah, you man.
Now just find a really good church, aka Westside.
Amen, amen. Which, so this week, we continued in the train of thought a little bit from last week. And the big word was honor, right? And so Paul in these verses is sort of starting to wrap up. He's getting towards the end of the letter and he goes, hey, this is how you guys need to relate to one another. And the word honor is used. We said that honor is the act of holding all people in positions in high value. So when the bride comes into the room and the minister says, would you all please rise? It's you rise, you stand because you are honoring that person. You're saying this moment is for you. And it's interesting because this week he transitioned, continues with the thought of honor, but he talks about Timothy's position of being a pastor and what is the church relationship of congregants to pastors to elders, church leaders, and all of that? And then he kind of tacks on the workplace and stuff like that as well. But really the thrust, we said, was we honor God by honoring those in positions of authority over us, which again, I love because I think it's one of those Christian ethics. So like I love apologetics, meaning a defense of the faith. So I love Christianity and I believe Christianity is true, not just because of what I've experienced. So John Wesley had this thing called the quadrilateral. I love this. It's the four, think of four legs that hold up a stool. So John Wesley said there are four areas that we should test whether something is true or not. So it's logic, reason, tradition, experience. Those are the four things that you should put a worldview in to see if it works. Logic, 2 + 2 = 4. Like, does this thing even make logical sense?
Sure.
Think Christianity from creation to all of that. Logic, then reason. So that logic played out, does it hold up? Does the command in the Old Testament hold up into the New Testament? Does it reason itself out? Logic, reason. Then tradition. What has historically human beings in society said about blank about this? And then the last one's experience. I think Christianity holds so true because of the ethics, the idea of honor, not even this concept of Jesus and a bloody cross and resurrection and all of that, but just the way we treat each other as human beings. And then even in the hierarchy of like kings and presidents and then police officers and then parents and then school teachers, like, what are we supposed to do with people in those positions? And the scriptures say emphatically over and over and over again, honor them. You honor them. And I love that because I think it holds true. When you look at a society that values people in those positions, it plays out well in that sense. And so it was kind of awkward, and I would like to kind of hear a little bit of your take on this. I said in the beginning of the sermon, I need to pause and stop and talk for a second here, because this sermon could seem very self-serving, because Paul is literally saying, church in Ephesus, here's how you should treat your elders. Well, I'm teaching this passage. So basically, in a way, you could say, Jason, you're preaching a sermon of how we should treat you. Yeah, right. And I was like, wah, wah. That just sounded really awkward and weird in that sense. And I thought about it really in an equipping sense.
Sure.
There have been people who, you know, move to St. Louis or Cape or something. And one of the things they say is, you know, they were church members here. Hey, can you get us connected to a church up there? And absolutely would love that. But when they get into that new context, how are they supposed to relate to those pastors, to those church leaders? And so we taught it from sort of that angle, you know, if you will. But I want to ask you this question. When it comes to authority, have you been someone in your life who is kind of a personality thing, right? Who's grown up, and like my wife, Courtney, would be someone who has grown up basically submitting to authority. She's someone who follows the rules. She's the best, most honest person that I know. Or are you someone who grew up kind of naturally resisting authority? So for me, I'm not only skeptical of authority, I am almost like by inclination, knee-jerk reaction, don't touch that. Well, I'm going to touch it. You know what I mean? Yeah. In that sense, what's your personality been
like? Well, you shared it a little bit on Sunday of just you being the youngest.
Hey guys, we wanted to take a break from the podcast and I wanted to fill you in on this incredible resource. Listen, I know I've got a lot of pastor friends, a lot of church volunteers, maybe you're on staff at a church, and there's a ton of things that when I started working at a church that I didn't know anything about. And when I became pastor at Westside, there was a lot that I didn't know about. And one of those things was church insurance. I'm in a board meeting. Someone says, what's our insurance policy? And I'm like, I have no idea. Listen, I don't care how much you paid for your seminary education. They don't teach you about church insurance. But listen, Westside has found a great resource at First Choice Insurance through our agent, Matt Phillips. First Choice Insurance is locally operated. It is family owned. They have a ton of insurance policies from A to Z. They've insured everything from airplanes, zoos. Like, legitimately, Matt told me that they've insured a lion before. So listen, if you work at a church, if you're a pastor, and you're like, seminary did not teach me about church insurance, I want you to reach out to Matt Phillips at First Choice Insurance. The number is 573-686-2870. Again, that's Matt Phillips at First Choice Insurance, 573-686-2870, or you can check them out on Facebook. Again, family owned, locally operated, Matt Phillips, First Choice Insurance. Back to the show, guys.
Yeah, yeah. And so just to clarify, I am the youngest of five.
Come on.
And so I didn't even know this. Me and you have a lot more in common than I even knew after 13 years
of friendship. I don't know if I put two and two together on that as well.
But my oldest sister is 15 plus years from me.
It's my brother John.
Yeah. So like Amy was like, I mean, she had a driver's license when I was born.
Yeah. My brother John's getting ready to be in. He's in his 50s.
Yeah. So I grew up the baby of the family, all of that. So yeah. But so when it comes to authority, that was always an interesting thing because my brother was always trying to always bring the authority. And so for me, when I heard that, I was like, man, that's that I grew up with a fear of authority. And like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of like, if this person uses that authority wrongly, that's going to greatly impact me in my life. And so I lived in fear of my brother.
That's good.
And it's just one of those things where, I mean, obviously I grew up in a household too, where it was, you know, if, when dad gets home,
you're gonna
get it. And so I would put socks in my underwear.
That's a great insight. That's a great insight for you that authority was kind of viewed as negative. There was a fear of it in that sense.
Yeah, I grew up, that was how I grew up. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. I mean, I relate to that in the sense that because I disrespected and dishonored authority, it always came with consequences.
Sure.
I think as well. But let me ask you this, coming into the church world, I love your story. And you talked a little bit last week, kind of the older generation put their arm around you. When it came to the pastor or church leaders, how were you raised and taught to view those positions and interact with those positions?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because my great grandfather was a pastor.
Yeah.
So my grandparents took me to church and that sort of lifestyle, if you will. You know, my grandma, she was a PK.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and you were a PK. And
for sure.
So, and my grandpa wasn't, obviously. And so there was kind of that dynamic of the pastor is one, they're called to that job.
Mm.
In other words, there's no one. And the idea was for me as a teenager was planted in my brain of there is only one person in the room planted to do that job.
Yep.
And so honestly, I think I was introduced in an unhealthy way of viewing the pastor of that's the most perfect person in the room.
Yep.
The Lord knows that.
Yeah.
And the Lord has gifted them and honored them to do it.
Sure.
And then to see how they interact, you know, that, I mean, because we had a larger church. It was like church around 250 or so.
Yeah.
But we had what was called a worship and arts pastor, which you know what I mean? What is that even? Right?
Sure. Yeah.
But there was the lead pastor, the youth pastor, and the worship and arts pastor. And,
yeah.
But there was only one lead pastor.
Oh,
and so it was a very unhealthy relationship. And so much so to like, if he didn't, I don't know.
Expectations and all that stuff. Yeah. Man.
And it's so, and when you get to talk to my grandma one-on-one, a lot of it was expectation of like, she knew the expectation that her father had growing up. And so, you know, it was interesting to hear someone in like my grandma from that perspective of then how it influenced me of.
Yeah. I grew up in a branch that was very similar, that the phrase that was used was the man of God, God's man. And so there is a line in the Old Testament where David is going to essentially kill Saul. But he says he doesn't kill Saul because Saul is God's anointed man. And so the preachers and the preacher boys and those who were going into ministry and preachers, that was a phrase that was used a lot, which is like, you know, God's anointed in that sense. And so I think, yeah, there's that, you know, we referenced it in the sermon when we idolize someone.
Man, that was gold.
It's only going to be a matter of time until we demonize that same person because you can't fulfill that sense. And but I love the way that Paul handles it in the verses because there's, you know, you honor them through generosity. That was one thing of like, hey, they're working. A laborer is worth his wages. And so I liked that. But the next point that I really liked was that you honor church leaders through a due process and equality. And Paul says, if you have a charge against an elder, you don't just hurdle accusations. That can hurt people. You need to have this. And then he kind of walks through and talks about sin and doing all of that. I'm going somewhere with this. Paul is basically saying, yes, God has called them, but they are sinners, just like you're a sinner.
Yeah.
And everybody in the church needs to have accountability. And maybe we can come back and talk about this. The line that we used was, the church is a safe place for sinners, but the church should not be a safe place to sin, right? Yeah. You got to handle that. And so it kind of brings it down of, yes, God has called them, but not because they're awesome and they're better than you. It's just the position that God has them in. It's a gifting of leadership or whatever that is. I'm saying all that to say this. You being in ministry, being on staff at a church, being a pastor, what is one thing that you wished people, maybe even congregants, would understand about the position of being a pastor? Like, if you could give someone insight into your position, what is one thing that you wish people understood?
Man,
I've got an answer. Maybe you can follow up with it. I'll never forget hearing Sean Prager, who's a police officer. I asked him this question about being a police officer, and he said, it was like during the riots and all that stuff. We actually did a thing, May We Honor, and interviewed them. And he said, man, I just wish people realized that police officers are humans too.
Yeah.
That the badge and the uniform and the gun doesn't mean we're not human.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, why did you shoot that person? Why did you do? And that's a whole different discussion. But for me, and in these verses, I definitely think that that's something that I wish would be communicated more in some sense. Like, I'm married, man. I've got a wife. I've got kids. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a brother. I'm a part of a family. I'm a son. I mean, the number of identifiers in my identity that come before pastor is actually a lot. I'm a friend. I'm all of those things. You know what I'm saying? So is that,
I'm going to go a different route.
Come on, I love it.
But in a similar direction, and this is just completely all cards on the table. And hopefully this is, I mean, if you're a pastor listening to this, you're probably going to say amen when you're listening to this.
Come on.
That a lot of your pastors, regardless of youth, you know, leader, whatever it is, a lot of them are wounded.
That's good.
I've shared this before. I mean, one of my favorite books is Henry Nouwen's The Wounded Healer.
Yep.
And one thing he says in that book that's interesting is like, if you're not healed, like if you have an open wound, like it stinks. And so you have to be healed to be able to help others heal. And it's a really big conviction of his that he has. And I just think that many pastors, they're so wounded. And this is in all capacities, whether it be past life. It doesn't have to be just church people did you wrong. It doesn't have to be anything like that, but it's wounded. You know, every pastor that I've met has an interesting story. You know, as much as we'd love to say it's an ivory tower theology, I went to school, I grew up in the church. A lot of the pastors I know at three or five years in their ministry, they're wounded. And I think where I'm going with this is I think that when someone enters a friendship or a discipleship, you know, plan with a pastor, they don't expect the pastor to have wounds. They expect the pastor to only have truth. And it's like, well, you only get truth through that passage of understanding what happens in life. Anyway, I just think it's a very truth-telling thing to say. Of 100%. Just, man, some of us are wounded and you have to be healed. Obviously, I think that's that goes back to, but pastors can relate in those moments too, I think is the biggest blessing. But yeah, man, that's, if I could say that to anybody of, we are never going to claim, at least me, I'll never claim that I have the answer.
Amen.
And I can point, you know, cite the verse to make everything better. And I think that's where some pastors really have a fruitful ministry is.
Yeah.
Is being wounded, being able to be healed from those wounds, and then go right back into the battlefield.
For sure.
To find people to say, hey, you need healing and help.
I like that. I think it goes along with, I think the toughest thing for me is that I wish people understood the gap, the Grand Canyon of a gap that is between the perfect word of God, the perfect word coming through an imperfect person.
Yeah.
So the word is perfect, and the principle and the truth and the concept that you are teaching is great and it's holy and it's true, but that is coming through a messenger, a broken person. And oftentimes we as human beings, we put those two things in the same category, that if that person is preaching the perfect word, then there's a level that they are other than me. That's a word Henry Nouwen uses, when you other somebody. They're not equal to you, they're other. And man, I mean, you know this, handling and preaching the word, like the toughest part in sermon prep and delivering a sermon is like it fillets you open first and foremost. And so I'm not somebody who teaches, here's the concept, here's how I've mastered it, and here's how you need to get there. It's, here is the perfect word of God. Here's why we struggle. Here's why I struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my sin, but here's what Jesus has done in my life. Maybe he can do it in yours. You know, I think that is a much, much different approach, you know, in that sense, for sure.
I think it's a healthy way of looking at what leaders are there to help you do.
Yeah.
You know, I love the way you say this sometimes in conversation of like, we're not the principal.
Right.
You know, in that sense, we're fellow men in the battle. You know, we're good soldiers for the faith.
Yeah, we're not you're not getting called in the principal's office. You're not getting in trouble.
No, we battle together.
In that sense. For sure, man.
I've been saying that a lot. Can I say that really quick?
Yeah.
Man, if there's any wording that I picked up on you lately.
Okay.
In that sense.
What is it?
Exactly. It's so a part of our vocabulary. When you say in that sense, do you say that?
Oh, for sure.
And I catch myself at home talking to Megan, and I'm like, in that sense. And she'll kind of look at me and I'm like, it's like my dad used to always say this. My brother says it is. You know what I mean?
Know what I'm saying?
You know what I mean?
Know what I mean, man.
And it's like in the middle of a, like, hey, you know, I was just down the corner. You know what I'm saying? You know, we get to that light. You know what I mean?
Know what I'm saying?
And then you turn to left. Anyway, so it's like language I've picked up from Jason Jordan.
Well, anytime you
preach, in that sense,
it's what Proverbs says, when words are many, transgression is certain. Meaning the more you talk, the more you're going to say something wrong. But the more that I talk, oh man, those cliches. Matt Blackburn says all the time, I say, look up here, look up here, look up here. Don't miss this. Look up here. You know, and I don't find how much I'm doing that. I'm just excited to, you know, like, this is good.
I think that's a healthy one. I think if you do that to me when I hear it, I think it's kind of a planned one.
Yeah, like maybe I do need to look up here.
Because arguably you're sitting in the front or standing in the front of the sanctuary, so you get to see people that are on their phones.
Sure.
And arguably it's not even like if you're not paying attention. You'll get people that are like, oh my gosh, she's talking to me. You know? So, but when I say in that sense, man, if you see me out in the street and I say in that sense.
Yeah.
Just laugh at me and say that. But
listen, when it comes to honoring authority, what are some ways in your life, and maybe you can talk about some people who have been in positions of authority that have impacted your life, but how have you, Alex, practically honored people who have been in positions of authority in your life?
Yeah, I mean, if I had to say the top of my list, and this is maybe not... But you'll probably have a different answer to this because my interaction with authority in life has been different,
sure,
considering my story. But
sure,
I'll never forget. There was a time that I had a disagreement with my grandmother and I stormed out the back door and I ended up breaking the back door because it was those older doors that were really thin. And so I thought I was super manly by breaking it. And my grandfather was standing outside where we have a back deck, where it was the deck me and Megan got married at. And it's, everyone's got memories in the backyard there. But I remember walking out and I remember looking at my grandfather and he, of course I'm 6'5". He's, you know, every bit of like 5'10". Whatever.
Sure.
But he looked at me and he says, "You go ahead," thinking that I would like make a move on him.
Wow. Yeah.
Because he knew I was mad.
Sure.
And he knew that I needed to be in a situation where it was, hey, you are more than who you are.
Wow.
In that sense, you are more than your emotions.
Yeah.
And you need to realize that right in hell in this moment.
Right.
And I remember just breaking down.
He pulled that card, son.
And I mean, my grandfather is, I joke with people that he looks like Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't.
Sure.
But in that moment, I was so aggravated. But anyway, it goes to the authority of, I think in those moments, for me, it taught me a lot of what that is. That authority is there for.
Mm.
That authority is there for accountability.
Yeah, that's good.
I think that's what I learned a lot from them was, if it wasn't for that authority, I would not be accountable to anybody.
Well, and that's what we said in the sermon, right?
Yeah.
So no one has ever seen God. 1 Timothy 6 says, 1 John says this. And so it's a crazy thing in the Christian life when we say we have a relationship with God through his son, Jesus. And then we're like, oh yeah, no one's ever seen God the Father. But what's so important, the reason why we honor the authority that's around us is because that's been placed there by the God above us.
Yeah.
And so what you just said was that accountability is there because how am I relating to my Heavenly Father?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I don't honor my boss at work, how in the world can I say that I'm submitting to a God that I can't see?
Yeah.
I mean, that is a practical boots on the ground application of that for me. And I think for me in my area of life where honoring authority has been how do I speak, treat, and act about that person when I'm not around them. Okay. So let's say it's a boss. Let's say it's a, you know, another pastor, someone who is above me. You know, I'll never forget, this is a very practical story. I was a student pastor up in St. Louis. It was the first time I ever worked at a church. And PJ, Pastor John, was my pastor. He was my boss. He was all the above. But I had inherited a student ministry that was birthed from a volunteer who's a really close friend of mine. And he, because he wasn't employed by the church and was older, basically did whatever he wanted and then asked for forgiveness later. But for me, it was a lot different. Like I had a staff, a board, you know, all this I had to submit to. And the youth group was entering into a rough season because like I had this, there were clashing visions on a lot of stuff. And I'll never forget my friend who had started that ministry was saying, you don't need to listen to Pastor John. You need to do whatever you feel called to do. And I said to him, he's my boss. Like, so it's not just this is my opinion for the way that this should go. At a very practical level on paper, man, this guy's my boss. I'm under him and he's asking me to do something. And for me not to do that is just going against that. And so for some reason, for that moment forward, speaking and acting, how, you know, when somebody comes up to me, I mean, I remember being in that church and somebody coming up to me, you know what it's like, and going, hey, why are we doing blank? And why is, you know, PJ doing this? And how come we're doing that? And trying to draw you in,
right,
basically to a level. And I remembered very quickly, man, I've got to honor Pastor John in those moments, regardless of, even if I disagree with Pastor John, like there's, I hold him at such a high value in our relationship that I will never speak ill of him by having not first gone to him and said, hey, I disagree with you in this area and this, that, or the other, but like honoring him by not just slandering him in public or stuff like that. And I feel like that was a big deal for me in my life because it was a very easy temptation of being this young passionate student pastor who had all these opinions to be able to go like, yeah, man, why are we doing that? And I can't believe that. And I think that's why Paul's saying some of this in these verses. Yeah. Like, that's a real practical thing that can happen in church life.
Yeah, and the church that we're speaking of too. I mean, this is a living, it's a growing church. I mean, it's a pagan church. I mean, it's a pagan religion.
Yeah.
Or in the midst of pagan religion. And so, yeah, I just think it is an interesting concept when you look at Paul being, you know, looking at Timothy as a child.
Yeah, 100%.
And his son in that sense. And there it is again.
Yeah.
But just the amount of influence and authority that he has to be able to actually hold him accountable. Paul's constant reminder to Timothy is, you know, who are you accountable? Like, there's that constant reminder of, hey, we're not together.
Sure.
You know, but remember, discipline.
And, remember and, that.
You know, that was another big word that we used, you know, this series was fundamentals.
Yep.
And you know, being able to remember what's the fundamentals. I mean, I'll never forget your illustration. You threw it in the newsletter. Shout out to our newsletter.
Okay.
What Larry was Bird, it? The Larry oh, Bird,
yeah,
the fundamentals.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so how much he would shoot free throws and, you know, all the discipline that it took of
every
you don't have
day.
To be the best, you don't have to be the holiest or whatever. But if you are, you know, what is faithfulness?
Yep.
You know, and I love the way that you worded that and how this series just completely backs that up of what is true faithfulness in the Lord? What does that look like? And is it, you got to memorize the whole book of the Bible to feel faithful? And it's like, no, it's just waking up, getting on your knees and saying, it's Jesus that lives through me.
As Eugene Peterson says, a long obedience in the same direction, you know, for faithfulness. Let me ask you this. I think when it comes to honor, a lot of the people listening work jobs, they have people above them. One of the things I love about your story is you come into Westside from leaving the corporate world, right?
Yep.
And so insurance is what it was and all this stuff. Just this Sunday, a guy asked me to pray for him, works at a job. There's some things going down. He doesn't agree with it, but he is in a position and there are people in a position above him. And he was struggling. He was like, man, today was for me. How do I honor them? There's a lot going on. I think you speaking into this, having just coming out of this, would be really great for our listeners. What are some ways for you in that corporate world that, and then you being Alex in the corporate world, but also Alex, who's a disciple of Christ and a Christian who, you know, once was a pastor at this church and doing this thing, and now I'm in the corporate world and like, but I disagree with my boss. And, you know, you always talk about emails and performance reviews and like, man, what are some practical ways that you found that you could honor and still being a Christian, like being Alex who loves and follows Jesus, but is at this insurance company and I got to get my job done, but I'm working for the Lord as well. What were some things that you did in that environment or some lessons that you learned in that?
Yeah. I'll never forget when I first, so every corporate world, every corporate organization, enterprise you work for has an org chart, obviously.
Yeah.
For me, that's the difference between you and me is I love org charts.
Sure.
So, but
hey man, I created an org chart for this series.
And I feel like I can, no, I'm just kidding.
That was influence, baby. Come on.
But I remember whenever you're like clocking into work, obviously you do it on the internet. But there was a hierarchy chart that you could always see your name wherever you were under your current leader. And then it was always the hierarchy chart of how many people was it between you and his name was Jim Posey.
Whoa. You saw that every time you clocked in?
You could see it every time the org charts came in.
Whoa.
And so you could see like who your boss was reporting to. And anyone in the corporate world knows those names change a lot.
Constantly. Yeah. Yeah.
And only thing that changes is like the news today. And there's an email that goes out about who's been released or who's taken over their position or there's a merger. So that department's now being handled by this person. And then you can only imagine, well, that person was already struck anyway, but you could see that every day you logged in, you could see how far away you were from the CEO or the COO or whatever. And anyway, it just always, for me, it was interesting because, and I'm just going to say this for anyone listening, and if my old boss listens to this, like, hey,
praise
man,
be to God.
I still love you.
Yep.
Nothing, no ill, but there was a long majority of my corporate world where I did not, I had a boss that was hard.
Sure.
Okay. I'll just put it that
hard
way.
Hard to work for.
With respect.
Man, people relate to that, bro.
We were just we just had different opinions on teamwork and just a lot of things. But what it reminded me of, and this is kind of to steal it from a very famous person, but It's the why. Like, yes. It's the why behind what we do. Yeah. You don't sell what you do. You sell why you do it.
It's good.
And I think for me, it was like, yes, it's insurance. And anyone listening to this, said, you know, they're probably like, ugh, insurance. It's gross. So like, they only steal your money. You even had a joke the other day about an insurance company.
Yeah.
And, you know, shout out to Matt Phillips.
Yeah.
But I say all that because like, I always was like, I know I work for an insurance company.
Yeah.
But for me, we were customer service.
For sure.
And so for me, I could care less if we were selling phone books.
Okay.
For me, it was always remembering the why, as we are selling a product that people need.
Yeah.
And so when I would train it, because I was an insurance trainer is what I was. So what that really meant was, if you didn't know anything about insurance, day one, you met someone like me that was like, do you know what the words bodily injury mean? And people would be like, that's for dead people, right? And they'd be like, well, kind of. And then casualty insurance. And anyway, so, but I say all that because that was, for me, the corporate world was always reminding myself of, this is a product.
Dude.
Being able to always remind yourself of that, regardless if it's a bad boss or it's a difficult boss, or like us, we went through a lot of turnover. And so obviously with turnover came your workload increased and your pay didn't. Oof. And the times of the day didn't. And so you went from working, you know, 40 hours a week to 45, and everyone was doing it. So you couldn't try to pull the pity of, well, I'm working extra this week.
Sure.
We got calls in the queue. It was a call center. And so if you're ever familiar with that language, if there's calls in the queue, which means you are here until there's no more calls in the queue. You don't have to clock off at 5 o'clock. That's not how that worked.
And you look in the right-hand screen and there's 50 blinking lights.
Yeah,
and
you're it was the red. Yeah. And so all of that to go back to say that a lot of it for me was always remembering of like, you can you have control over how you act in those moments, and what you're doing is really important. So always reminding yourself of like,
wow,
it doesn't matter who you're, who's in charge. And so what it did was, it allowed me really to always stay focused of like, you know, I knew my boss's boss's boss.
Sure.
Because he hired me. He actually had gone up the ladder a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so for me, it was always really cool to watch him go up the ladder. You know, he always, you know, you're getting more and more higher up in the corporate world when your attire goes from casual every day to like, he's in slacks now.
Khakis to dress pants to suits.
Yeah, like it
nice.
It's a gradual change. But yeah, I just remember that always was something that helped me because
insurance.
Like, it's a boring, quite frankly, it's a huge industry, but
it's time to give another shout out to another sponsor of the Rest of the Sermon podcast. This shout out goes to our great friends over at Smart Marketing right here in Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Smart Marketing is a fantastic media company. And when I say media, I mean websites, graphic design, videography, anything that you need, Smart Marketing can do it. You need to head on over to Facebook, just type in Smart Marketing, and you'll see their cool light bulb logo pop up, and you can get a ton of information there. Or you can just give them a call, Smart Marketing at 573-840-0334. Again, that's Smart Marketing right here in Poplar Bluff, 573-840-0334. Back to the show.
Boring industry. Someone says, I work in insurance, they're going to be like, and what's your favorite food? Like, they're done talking about
Sure.
So yeah, that was always something for me that helped, regardless of all the other, you know,
dude,
fundamentals to it.
That's a great insight, man, because it's what 2 Peter, one of the verses we read, says, as unto the Lord. So no matter, you know, if you're listening to this, no matter where you work, what you do, a school teacher, whatever, perspective is what I heard you say.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good way to word it.
I mean, perspective has got to be, yes, at one level, this is my job and this is how we feed each other and this, that, and the other. But there's also an eternal perspective, and I'm doing this as unto the Lord, and I'm doing this as if I'm going to present this to Jesus someday, you know? So that's incredible. Well, guys, listen, we start a brand new series that we advertised. It is called Thy Will Be Done.
Y'all are in for a treat.
Discovering and doing God's will. And so it is hands down, bar none, the most asked question that I get from coffee to whatever of I just want to do God's will. And man, I got this job. And how do I? And so we're just going to look. Can we, like, even think about this phrase, like, God's will. You're saying the God that created the universe, the cosmos, you know what he wants for your life, and that's what you're currently doing. That's a massive statement. Yeah. And so I'm really excited about all the implications of it. But also, we've got some important things about some people who maybe they've been visiting Westside. They want to get connected. They want to get plugged in. We saw a ton of new people this summer. A lot of people, school started back. There's regular routines. And they're like, hey, how do I get plugged into this thing? What do we have coming up, Alex?
So yeah, so this week it impacts almost every single ministry.
Yeah.
So starting off this Wednesday coming up, Westside Women will have their launch. So yep. If you're a woman of Westside, 16 years and older, we invite you to come out, Westside Women. That there's on the Facebook page. You can find them. There'll be more info, but again, just come hang out. It's for any women in Westside. And if you're new to Westside, this is your invite. We want you to be
there.
That's
how you get connected, man.
There will be people ready to greet you. It'll be a fun time. It's just one of those things where I know that I personally get to see my wife just come home, and it's just really fruitful.
Filled up.
Yeah, yep. It is a fruitful time for any women in the church to come and be a part of that.
Yep.
The same night, just a few minutes later, we are, as the youth group of Westside, Youth is going to be actually hanging out at Moss Playplex.
Come on.
At 6:30. This is going to be our fall launch, so youth will be going to Wednesday nights now. At 6:30 every week following this
Love
next
it.
Wednesday. And so we're going to do a kickoff at Moss Playplex, which they have batting cages. It's a basketball court. It'll be fun. And I'm just saying, a good.
What are the ages for that?
It'll be 7th grade and up.
Love it, man.
So 7th grade and up. So if you're, and this is for anyone in the Butler County area.
School
this
has
is
started. Just, yep, come on.
Homeschool kids, come on. It's yep. all right. But yeah, 7th grade and up this Wednesday night at 6:30. And then.
Yep.
I may even let you head this one up a little bit. On Saturday,
yep.
We have the men, Westside Men. September 9th. What are they doing?
So we got a dudes day coming up September 9th, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's going to be here at the church, and it's all about dudes. There's going to be, I think, some axe throwing. There's going to be washers. There's going to be a cornhole. There's going to be all kinds of games.
I haven't played washers in so many years.
Yeah.
When Blackburn told me that, I was like,
come on.
Let's go.
It's going to be super competitive, so please bring it out. And this is a time where we just go, hey guys, we're getting ready to get together. There's a really good meal. There's all that stuff. Let me plead with the women who are listening to this and to the men. Number one, if you're a wife, please put this on your husband's calendar. Just tell him and empower him. Hey, remember, you've got the dudes day coming up. Yeah. If you're a guy listening to this, the dudes day is all about you inviting your other guy friends and going, this is what we do every Monday night. Because starting that following Monday at 6:30, September the 11th, we are launching back Westside Men.
Yep.
And that is a consistent lifesaver for a lot of men in our church. Yep. And we are expecting a wave of guys. So we averaged close to 50 guys last year every Monday night. Listen, the Lord is doing incredible things through Westside Men. So that's 16 years and older. And listen, we've got guys who come from different churches.
Yep.
They are members of other churches, and they come on Monday night because it's really all about connecting. We say that you find your brothers for the battle, and the goal is to not get beat up, but to get built up. So that's going to be happening. We've got one last thing for the people who are really wanting to get connected and say, you know, how do I make this my home church? Like, I've been coming. Do I grab a snake? Like, what do I do in order to find out more about this church? What do we have coming up, Alex?
So that is going to be, our 3-week connection class.
Yeah, man.
So now this is again, the idea here, and I love the way we word it here at Westside, is if you've been coming to Westside for a little bit or a long time and you want to go from a Sunday attender to a family member, the doorway in which that happens, you go from the front door into the living room, down into the dining room, and that is going to be a connection class. So you're going to hear all about what I love is the first week you hear about the history of where we stand, where does Westside stand in the history of the church.
Church history on a napkin,
I
baby.
I love it. It's a great time. The first week you get to hear about the history of Westside. You get to hear about the history of the church. Then you get to hear the history about our church.
Yeah.
We go over questions about the faith. It's a great time of just going in. Bring your Bibles. That's going to be at 6:30 on the first Wednesday of September 13th.
Yep.
That'll be here at the church, 6:30. Sign up at the Info Center here next Sunday. We want to see you. We want you to bring your family. There'll be childcare this round.
For sure,
so,
man.
But it'll be from 6:30 to around 8:15, right?
Yep.
And it's a fun time to go again from a Sunday attender to a family member. I've personally been through this one time fully as a staff member, and it's always a joy just to see what people go through when they first, I don't know what to expect to leave going, oh my goodness, like we're meeting with board members. We're
yeah, you meet board members, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I mean, you find out everything. And so
we only ask for your blood type.
That's it. That's all it is. And then your social security number so we can take out good credit in your name. And so that's pretty much it. No. Listen, the sign up sheet is in the lobby, so you can do that this Sunday. But again, we just gave you a ton of information. The newsletter's getting ready to go out. So please check out what's up at Westside. Also, if you've got a question, shoot us an email at info@westsidepb.org. Shoot us a message on Facebook. We want to connect with you. If you're a listener that's still listening to this, we're coming to the close of the First Timothy series. Here's what we would love. We would love to hear your feedback, and I would love to read those on the air next week. And so what has First Timothy meant to you? What has God done in your heart and mind through this book of the Bible? Write it into us. Catch me or Pastor Alex on a Sunday morning. Let us know. We would love to get that feedback. So, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. We love you guys. And until we meet you again, it's all about Jesus. Peace.